So, Damien, how's life been treating you?
Doing great, Nick. All hail the great Nick Hale. Life's been good. Life's been good so far. It's been a great ride, especially over the past maybe year or year and a half with this new comedy news thing that I've been putting together.
Yeah, I've seen a few of your clips on YouTube. How did you come about starting that show, and what was your inspiration behind that?
It came about when the pandemic hit, and you know, as an actor, you're always looking for work, and the pandemic was just brutal for actors and broadcasters and everyone alike. I mean, the whole world just kind of stopped. So one of the auditions that I happened to come across was something where it was getting close to the election season. It was right before the 2020 presidential elections here in the United States. And there was a company that was trying to come up with a comedy spoof where they would have a host who would kind of pretend to be a newspaper editor. He'd be sitting at his desk, and it would be a messy desk with a brown bag with a bottle of booze in it and messy pizza boxes everywhere. And he would kind of talk about the day's news leading up to the election and make fun of the headlines. So the idea was you'd have a headline from today, and then he would kind of make fun of it. So I did my variation of that. It wasn't exactly what they wanted. I just didn't see the appeal of having like a homeless person reading the news. It just didn't seem right to me. So I kind of did it my own way. I wore a suit and tie, and I kind of just made funny jokes and wrote it. I didn't get the part. I didn't even get a call back. But I had so much fun doing it. I thought, you know, I could probably do this. I could actually probably just do this myself. And that's how it started. And each week I tried to make it a little bit more professional looking, a little bit slicker. I put a little bit more time into the graphics that go with it. And it really took off. So we'll see where it lands. But right now it's doing very well.
Congrats on the success, man. Yeah, I know, putting together a show, and when stuff doesn't come your way, the best way is just to make stuff come about. So you have to do it yourself. And the way you're doing it, you're single-handedly producing the show. What is the struggles of doing this?
Well, you know, doing anything by yourself has limitations, as I'm sure you know. But I don't even know where I'm going with that. Even though I produce it myself, my wife helps me. I have to give her some props for that. During the course of the week, if she sees a funny article or a headline and thinks it might be good, she'll kind of, you know, help me out with that. And I usually try to bounce some of the ideas that I have off of her, especially when I'm recording, when I do like a rough edit. I'll kind of say, hey, honey, you know, what do you think of this? And sometimes I'll make changes based on her input. But aside from that, it's tough. It's really tough. The cool thing is that nobody can fire me, which is great. You don't come into like loggerheads with arguments with other people on the staff or things like that. It's all pretty much me. But of course, the downside is I'm responsible for everything. So luckily, I've had experience over the years of kind of being a one-man band, especially when shooting video productions and things of that nature. I would love to be a part of a team, and I always feel like I excel as part of a team. So the ultimate goal is really to work Hindsight Tonight in somewhere else, or have it take on a bigger kind of footprint, which would require more people to be involved. But for now, it works out pretty good. I kind of block out Saturday to write the script and start working on graphics. And then depending on how fast I am, I'll either record the show late Saturday night or early Sunday. Then I go through a couple hours of editing. And then this is my cat here, Emily. Sometimes Emily helps out. She's sort of like the editor. So we rely on her. Want to say hi?
Hi, Emily.
Hi. Hi. Say hi. There you go. I knew you had it in you. Sorry about that. So Sundays we do the edit, and then we put it out. We used to put it out on Mondays. And I just thought like that would be like a way to start the week. You know, the big start of the work week here in the United States is on Mondays. I don't know what it is in South Africa. But,
yeah, it's Mondays as well.
Yeah. So we wanted to do that. And then as I looked at some algorithms and just trying to find a home for the release for this, it kind of made it more clear that people are more likely to see it on a Sunday, maybe late afternoon, early evening. People are always seems like they'll check their email or they'll kind of go online. So I kind of segued it and made it Sunday night instead of Monday morning. The show was originally called Hindsight 2020, because we started it in 2020, and I thought that was kind of a cool like play on words. And then in January of 2021, I realized that still calling it Hindsight 2020 is kind of lame. Like people are going to start thinking like it's like a retroactive show, or you know, where you're reminiscing about 2020. So I changed it to Hindsight 2021. And then that's as we got creative. Through, I put a lot of thought into that, Nick. You know, I really did a lot of work to come up with Hindsight 2021. But then later in the year, I thought to myself, my God, am I going to do this every year? Is it, if I keep going with this, is it going to be Hindsight 2023? So I just thought, you know, I'm moving the show from night release. So now it's going to be Sunday night instead of Monday morning. It's coming out at night. Let's call it Hindsight Tonight. And it kind of rhymes, and we'll kind of just go with it from there. And it's been that ever since. And I think that was a good move. It's just catchier. It's just, you know, Hindsight Tonight. Hey, you know, it's just better.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So, of course, you've had like 31 years of experience in the industry. You've had a body of work behind you. But when it came to the release of Hindsight Tonight or Hindsight 2020, is it only on YouTube or is it available elsewhere? And how were you able to promote your show and get viewers to look at this? Because, of course, the show is a little bit, I know it brings your own perspective and twist into it, but there are also those shows that are on like mainstream television, like The Daily Show or Jimmy Kimmel's. So yes, what was your approach to getting it out there, making sure people knew what your show was about?
That's a great question, Nick. And that, and you mentioned some very, very formidable competition. Although I feel like the people who watch Jimmy Kimmel are the same people who watch The Daily Show or World News, or Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. There's a bunch of them, you know, and they're all great at what they do. Even Saturday Night Live Weekend Update is a variation of that theme. The big difference, I think, is that I don't have 15 writers on my staff. So there's no way that I could actually be competing against them. But for the most part, we offer a little chuckle to start your day or to end your night or whenever you want to watch it. The stuff that we have is timely, where it's good to watch it on a Sunday or a Monday or a Tuesday. We have people that watch the show all week long. So it's really whenever you can squeeze a few minutes in. Whereas you're kind of, I think, investing a little bit more time online. But, you know, when I think of Jimmy Kimmel, I don't think of a little segment. I think of an hour long show. I think, oh, it's the Jimmy Kimmel Show. It's this big thing to kind of slip in there. We got ourselves for David Brunner and Associates. David Brunner is an agent. He specializes in newscasters and broadcasters and TV hosts. He's one of my agents in America. And he came up with an idea where he wanted to kind of showcase some of his staff, his talent, if you will, to give them a platform so that they could get a job somewhere. So one of his clients, I had said, hey, I have this thing I'm doing. Can we work this in? And we talked about it. And now Hindsight Tonight airs on his network in between the other shows. So you can kind of catch it at the tail end of one show or the beginning of another. And all the shows feature his talent for the most part. And we're all looking for work. So we all have a common purpose to be on the show. That airs on Roku. He also has his own website. So the DBA Television. I'll give you the link and you can put it up there. It's DBA Television or DBA Television. It's one of those. So there is a footprint that kind of extends beyond just my, you know, local broadcasting, but I am on YouTube. I also have the website, hindsighttonight.com. It airs there every week. It also airs on my channel on Vimeo, and also my own personal website, DamianMuziani.com. It shows up there every week. So it's hard to miss us. Like if you're trying to find us, it's pretty easy to find us. And the audience has been growing. I think what really did it, Nick, was we started getting some accolades right away. I mean, we've really only been on the air for just over 18 months now, or just under 18 months. And we've already collected what I'm expecting to be a Gold People's Telly Award. The voting just ended, but we were in first place for the Telly Awards, which is a big deal in some countries. In the US, it's a moderately a big deal. It's a nice award. It's where it's voted on by the public. So we're expecting to be in first place for that. But We've also won a W3 award, a Davey award, and we were nominated for an Emmy wow. for my writing. Yeah, which was amazing. I was really, really blown away by that. That's the plaque over here that you see back here. Didn't win the Emmy, but got the nomination, which was, you know, it's a
yeah, that's true when they say that's like a checklist of your bucket list, just a nomination.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. You're absolutely right. Now, you know, hopefully we'll continue to get accolades, and we're up for some other awards in the future. But I think even though those things are kind of like egotistical kind of pats on the back, oh, I got this award or something, it does carry some credibility with it. And it right. might be the difference between someone scrolling and they're like, oh, what's this? I never heard of this. Oh, this was Emmy nominated. All right, let me see what an Emmy nominated show looks like. And then they can, you know, judge for themselves. So that's been a big help. And I don't really know where the future is going to go. I mean, I'm still looking to find a landing space for this. I can't imagine me doing this every weekend, especially I'm a big American football fan okay. here in the States. So when it turns into September, between September and December, it's really hard to concentrate on working on Hindsight when there's football games on for me. So I got through it last year, but it wasn't fun. And also it's taking time away from, you know, from my family and from my wife and from other fun things that we like to do. So it's something where if I continue doing it, I'd like to be able to have it find a home as part of something bigger or part of a package, part of a team, if possible.
Earlier, you mentioned Saturday Night Live as one of our competitors. Over here in South Africa, we don't have it on television. But of course, being exposed to the internet, you get that clips and all of those iconic segments with Bill Murray, Adam Sandler, even the newer ones. Like for me, being a writer, an actor, it's something that I would aspire to one day. Maybe it's like a launching pad for like some of the biggest names in Hollywood. You were actually on about 12 episodes of SNL, if I'm not wrong. What was your experience like on the show, and how did you get to appear on those shows?
Well, first of all, good luck in that pursuit. I mean, you're absolutely right. If you get asked to be a writer on SNL, You're set because you have instant credibility, and also you'll get agency representation with that very, very quickly. I just finished reading Bob Odenkirk's memoir, and he talks about when if you don't watch the show Breaking Bad or Better oh, yeah. Call Saul, he's the star of Better Call Saul, and I was oh, a big right. fan of his back in the 90s. He had a TV program called Mr. Show with David Cross, and that was one of my favorite shows. So this guy has been an inspiration to me. And in the book, he talks about how really, you know, he kind of worked his way. A friend of his kind of got him in to be a writer at SNL, and he didn't really consider himself to be a very good writer. He kind of just wasn't around a lot for that period of time, but he got an agent, he got a manager, I think Bernie Brillstein, who was a huge talent rep in the States for the longest time, signed him. And really, once you have someone talking for you, getting representation for you, that's half of the battle. It might be three quarters of the battle, Nick. If you have a big time agent sending you out on auditions, you got that credibility. And I think I don't have that top flight, top five agent representation at this point, but I have to assume that it's an easier road to walk as far as that goes. So anyway, as far as being on the show, yeah. Now it's important to remember, I wasn't a regular cast member. I served as what they call a background actor, or you could call it an extra. You could consider it to be that. Now that's not to say that I've never had a line of dialogue or that I wasn't featured, because I was. But when you take on a role as an extra, you're kind of just throwing caution to the wind. Sometimes you will be featured, sometimes you won't. And what really sucks is the show runs for 90 minutes, but they produce 120 minutes of content. And when you get cast in a role, you're being worked in a sketch or something that's pre-taped. So that means that you have to kind of go to 30 Rockefeller Center, usually on a Wednesday or a Thursday. You go there to get fitted for your wardrobe. You go through kind of a run through of what the sketch is. Then you go back on Friday and they do a rehearsal. It could be a dress rehearsal, but usually it's like a rehearsal. They break for lunch and then they come back and fine tune the sketch. And then on Saturday, the day that it airs, you have to spend the entire day at 30 Rockefeller Center. You get there mid-morning. You do a walkthrough of the scene and you get things ready for the dress rehearsal. Now, the dress rehearsal is at 7 o'clock, 7:30 p.m. And that's in front of a live studio audience. It's like you're on SNL and they're taping it, but it's not being broadcast live. They do this so that if, I mean, let's say somebody has a heart attack, you know, at 11:30 p.m. when the show actually airs, or somebody spills coffee on the computers or something like that. If for some reason they can't go live, they have a recording of the show that was done a couple hours previously in front of a studio audience, and they can just run with that. So it's sort of like a plan B. It also serves a purpose so that the writing staff and Lorne Michaels, the executive producer of the show, can then go back and watch that episode for about an hour, hour and a half at a 10 p.m. and decide which sketches are going to stay and which ones are going to go, because the final show has to be 90 minutes. They can't make it run longer than that. So all the sketches that didn't work or didn't make people laugh or they just personally didn't like, the writers can cut it. So once you're done with that dress rehearsal, all of the extras are sitting in a room. The last time I was there, they had us seated in where the Tonight Show is now. It's the studio audience. It used to be the Late Night with David Letterman years ago, and then it became Conan O'Brien's home for about a decade, and now it's kind of utilized as the Tonight Show. So you would just sit there and you would wait for them to post the list of sketches that are going to go on, and you're waiting and you're hoping and you're texting your friends. I don't know if I'm going to be on. I'll let you know. So then they post it and you'll see if your sketch made the list. If it made the list, then you get to stay. If it doesn't make the list, then it's like, all right, well, I still got paid, but I gave up 3 days of my life and now I'm taking the late night train back home to New Jersey and I have to tell everybody, sorry, my sketch got cut. And that happened about half the time. Half the time I would get screwed. But the worst, Nick, is when your sketch makes the cut, but it's at the very bottom of the list. So what that means is that your sketch is supposed to go on at 11 o'clock, but if the musical guest takes too long, or if they're so funny with Weekend Update that people are laughing so much that it takes them forever to finish Weekend Update, your sketch might still end up getting cut. And that did happen to me. And that really sucked, because I was going to be featured in a very funny sketch with Peyton Manning, who is a big time quarterback, American football quarterback, who's been retired and he's in the Hall of Fame now. But he's a funny guy. He's very well known. And it was a sketch where he was going to be a folk singer in a men's prison. And I was a SWAT team guy who protects him from the prisoners that are revolting against him. So I had to put on all this fake SWAT team gear with a helmet and vest. And it's a big laborious thing to get done.
Yeah.
So when they called us and we were on deck, I'm looking at my watch and it's like, all right, it's getting close to 1 o'clock. How are we going to pull this sketch off? And then sure enough, at like 5 minutes to one, they say, sorry, guys, we ran out of time. So now the last train out of New York is at like 1:10 a.m. and it's like 15 blocks away. I'm wearing SWAT gear. I have to get out of my clothes. I got to put my clothes on. I got to run to get the last train. That was rough. That was tough. But it's worth it, because the shows that you are on, you actually get featured. And I've been featured prominently several times. And that's a lot of fun. That's really cool.
Wow, it's quite a process. So are you going back to SNL anytime soon? You think you're going to give it another try?
That's a good question. You know, I performed the first time I was on was in 2006. And the last time I was on was maybe 2016. So over the course of like 10 years, I got some good FaceTime. They called me a couple years ago for something, and I don't know if I wasn't available or it was something where they were going to do a pre-tape and it didn't work out. Generally, if you want to do that kind of work, and this is advice for anybody who's listening or is interested or lives in the New York area and wants to get involved, they usually accept headshots during the month of August. And if you send your headshot to what they consider U5 roles, which is under five lines, U5/background, it'll be added to a list and you'll have the opportunity to maybe they'll call you to bring you in. I haven't updated my headshots. And I can tell you, Nick, I look way different now than I did in 2006. I'll bet you do too.
Right.
So I probably should send them a new headshot. I just haven't really gotten around to it. It would be fun to go back. You know, it's it's fun to be there because you were mentioning Bill Murray and Adam Sandler and some of the people from the past. Hey, man, this show is still shot in the same studio with the same hallways that John Belushi walked down and Dan Aykroyd and all those famous people. And if you're a fan of that show and you're a fan of the history, you get a lump in your throat being there, you know, and then you're part of this, you're part of this history. That's fun. It would be fun to go back and kind of do that again. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's not up to us. You know, they have to actually call us. I got on a different way. I attended a class, a seminar that was being taught by the casting director who was in charge of the U5/background staff. And so how this works is they allow you to come and meet them in a group of about 30 people. You do a monologue. You do a quick Q&A. A lot of people ask silly questions like, oh, what's Pete Davidson really like, you know, and that kind of thing, where they're not really actors, they're just kind of fans. But then there are the people that are serious that want to do it. So I did my monologue, I made the guy laugh, and then like a week later they called me, and it was really only a couple weeks later that I got my first experience on SNL. It was for an episode that was hosted by Steve Martin, who was my idol, you know, so it was a lot of fun. And the musical guest was Prince. So I really was on a great episode. That took place. That was a lot of fun. So I don't know. Everyone has a different path. That's been mine. So I would say either try to find a course in New York City if you're there, where someone involved with SNL is teaching it or working it, or send them your headshot in the month of August.
That sounds like sound advice. I heard somewhere that back in 1989, you actually were on an MTV show while they were like still doing music videos. And you were actually a winning contestant on a show hosted by Adam Sandler called Remote Control. What was that about? Like, what was it like just getting in there? I'm sure in the 80s, like, stuff was way different. So what was the show about, and how did you end up getting on it and eventually winning it?
Great question. I need to just tidy up a couple things. First off, Adam Sandler was on that show, but he wasn't the host. Ken Ober, the late Ken Ober, was the host of Remote Control. It was a show that kind of dealt with nostalgic television for the most part, and pop culture and music. It was really the first game show that MTV created. They were doing music videos. It was like they were still just the music video, and they were starting to expand and start to add to their offerings. And this was one of the first ones that they came up with. And it was a big hit. It was a big time show. I was still in college. And I didn't think I was going to be an actor or on TV or anything like that. They were recruiting. I loved the show. I thought it was badass, you know, and if you've never seen it, it was kind of cool where they would sit you in these reclining chairs and you would have a remote control in your hand and you'd pick a category with your remote. And you'd answer questions. Not only was Adam Sandler a part of it, but another SNL alum, Colin Quinn, was on that show. And who was the female involved? Kari Wuerer, who was super hot and very, very cool actress, edgy actress chick from that time frame. So the whole staff were these up and coming young, you know, people, and they were kind of a part of MTV, which was still young and kind of expanding. It was a lot of fun. It was great. I did win, but I mean, I didn't win the big prize. I beat the other contestants because my strength was definitely in pop culture and in film and TV and stuff like that. When you beat the other contestants, you do part two of the show, which is you sit on it's called a Craftmatic adjustable bed. I don't know if you know what that is. It was like a thing that they sold late night on TV in America, where it was like a bed where you could adjust, you know, the way that you're laying in it. Kind of like a tongue-in-cheek prize kind of thing. You lay in the Craftmatic adjustable bed and you have to guess 9 music videos that are playing at the same time all at once. Well, the thing is that, you know, the music videos weren't really my scene, and I've always been a hard rock, heavy metal fan, diehard from jump. And MTV really wasn't that type of show. They created a show, a late night show called the Headbangers Ball that focused on that years later. But I mean, you're just watching Mary J. Blige all day, you know, in the 80s. Like, that was it. So I wasn't really up on a lot of the music videos. So I didn't do good on the music video side, but I was the top winning contestant.
So you said you were in college at that time. So this must have been like the launching pad for your career, right?
It was. I mean, I went to college for filmmaking, Nick, and in college, I was able to kind of create a student-run TV show called Test Pattern that I hosted and executive produced, and it was kind of a way of kind of like cutting my teeth. But as college went on, it started to become clearer to me how tough it was to break into this type of industry. As a filmmaker and focusing more on film instead of acting, I kind of was following a path that wasn't really my true path. I am a filmmaker and I love to create, but what ended up happening was years later, I started making short films in a competition called the 48-Hour Film Project. And
Oh
I know
yeah.
they have this
I've
in
also
South
competed
Africa.
in that.
Oh, okay, cool. This is good, man. The ocean doesn't divide us, man. We're symbiotic here.
Right.
Yeah, the 48-Hour Film Project. So I entered that a few times and I wrote the script with some friends and we filmed it and I gave myself like bit parts in it. But what happened was I realized that some of the people that I cast in roles, in my mind, I thought, maybe I'm just a shitty director, which is possible, being realistic. But I'm not getting the performance I want out of my subjects. I could do a better job in this role than the person I'm casting. And slowly I kind of realized that I'm probably better suited as an actor first, and then a filmmaker and a host and all that stuff. So once I kind of made that change in my mind of what to do, it became easier to kind of follow that path. The only problem was I was in my 30s now, and it was like, well, most people that want to be an actor, that's all they want to do from the time they're 10, and they go to acting school. And I didn't do any of that. I didn't get on a stage until I was 33 years old. So once that happened, then it became very clear what I wanted to do, and I've been focused on it ever since. The only problem is I was focusing on it without having the added benefit of being young and getting discovered. Because that's a whole other world. If you're 18 years old and you get a part in a movie or a TV show, even if your career fizzles out, you're still going to be remembered. People are still going to bump into you 10 years later and say, "Oh, you're little Eddie from that thing I saw on TV." And you'll go to horror conventions or sci-fi conventions and sign autographs. You'll make a meager living, but you'll still have something that people remember you. The only thing that people can remember me from is Remote Control, where I had a mullet and I was like 20 years old, and I haven't had anybody come up to me and do that yet. I'd be like, "Yo, you're the guy on the Craftmatic adjustable bed from a million years ago." "Oh, yes, please, no autographs. I use a Casper bed now. I'm a different person now." So that's the struggle that I have. But at least I found my path and I'm on it. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that story is quite interesting. It's a bit similar to mine in a way, because I also went to film school to study filmmaking. My original initial passion was acting as well. And so I did find like once I started learning about filmmaking, it did take away like the acting element, because like you can't be directing and acting at the same time. I managed to do that with one of my short films, The Bad Guy. I actually won Best African Actor for that.
Oh,
And
cool.
yeah, so and then I stopped like acting because I wanted to just like focus on filmmaking. But after one of my films, I was short films I was directing, I found out because I had like a quite a big, okay, not a big, but it wasn't like a small crew that I'm like used to or small cast. And I found how difficult it was to actually direct actors, even though I thought as an actor I'd be able to like direct actors because I know how actors feel. But it is a lot harder than it sounds. Like Spike Lee once said that filmmaking is probably the hardest job there is. And people look at film and they're like, it must be easy to do so. So now one of like my guests that I had on the show, he's like a big filmmaker in China, and he was also an actor. He recommended that I did not direct my stuff. If I want to act in it, I should produce it and then get a different director to actually come in and direct it. So that's what I'm attempting to do now with my new short film, which I wrote, and I got the cast together now. I'm just waiting for additional funding. because I was funding it myself at first, but I wanted to be proper, so I extended production till a few months' time. So, yeah, so I
Hey
don't know
man,
where
good
that's
luck with
gonna.
that. I mean, I think that's great. I mean, I wish you the best of luck with that. I hope it's nice to be able to network with people and to get people to help out. The only thing I'll say is that, with all apologies to Spike Lee, Alaskan crab fishing has got to be a much difficult job, much, much more difficult than filmmaking and than directing. If you're out there in the Bering Sea trying to fish for crabs, that's got to be the toughest job, in my opinion.
Right. And also military stuff, like just walking, going through quicksand or something. That sounds very difficult, man.
It does. That does. Sorry, Emily's back for another cameo.
What's next for you?
There are a couple things that they say are in the can, that are waiting to come out. I think these are going to be worldwide releases. I'm not 100% sure, but there's a movie that I co-starred in for Netflix that stars Colman Domingo, and he's a really, really good actor, and he's going to be playing the part of Bayard Rustin, who was a civil rights advocate in the 60s that a lot of people don't know about. Barack Obama and Michelle Obama are the producers of this film to kind of show his story that kind of was parallel to the Martin Luther King story in some ways in the mid-60s. The big difference, well, I mean, there's many differences, but Bayard Rustin was a gay, an openly gay activist, and that kind of worked against him, as I'm sure you can imagine, with the repression of the 60s.
Right.
So I play a cab driver in that. That's going to be coming out this year on Netflix. I also have a co-star role in a TV series that I think is going to be airing on Amazon Prime called A League of Their Own. And this is sort of a follow-up to a major motion picture that was, I think it was in the late 80s, starring Tom Hanks and Gina Davis. It was about baseball players that had other jobs in the 40s, in the 1940s, when World War II was happening. But because a lot of the male baseball players at that time were off fighting in the war, promoters decided to have women play baseball. So it would be, you're kind of getting a flavor of the sport, and it's a little kind of like a promotional stunt kind of thing, by putting women in short skirts and making them
I
play
remember the
baseball out there.
movie. I've
So
watched, I
this
think it's
is
on
a
Netflix.
TV
I have watched
series.
the original movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's very cool. So this is sort of a, not a spin-off of that, it's sort of a retelling. It's the same concept. The men are at war and the women are playing baseball, but these women have in the old days they would call it alternative lifestyles, but maybe they're, some of them are bi-curious or LGBTQ centered. It's kind of exploring female relationships. That is a story that wouldn't have been able to be told in the past, but now
Right.
it kind of can. I hope I said that correctly. I feel like I might have, if I'm rubbing someone the wrong way, I'm sorry. I didn't write
No,
the picture. I'm only in one episode of it. But
but
I'm
it
looking
is
forward to
true.
that. It stars Abby Jacobson. She's fantastic. And Camden Darcy is in it, and she's also awesome as well. Looking forward to that. And then there's something else coming out. Black Network, which is affiliated with NBC, called Girls Five Eva, which is a story about a phony girl band that is sort of modeled after the Spice Girls, I guess. So in your mind, I guess you'd have to say, I mean, you know the Spice Girls, right, Nick? Do you know them? The Spice Girls, the
Yeah, I
one-hit
do.
wonders, Posh. There was Posh Spice. There was Old Spice. There was, no, I don't know what they were, but they were all the Spice Girls, and they were sort of one-hit wonders or two-hit wonders, and then they kind of disappeared. So let's pretend that the Spice Girls, let's pretend that, one of them did not marry Beckham, and they were all kind of just doing their own thing, and then they reconvened to do like a reunion tour. They might have actually done this. I don't know. I don't really follow the
Yeah, I
Spice
think they
Girls.
have.
Yeah. So let's pretend they're doing a reunion tour, but let's pretend like they weren't as good as they were made out to be to begin with. And that's what these are. These Girls Five Eva were like a girls band that were kind of schlocky, that kind of had a hit, and now they're all living like worse lives, and they decide to kind of get back together. So season one has already been done. It's produced by Tina Fey from SNL fame, and it's hilarious. And I was lucky enough to get a co-star role in an episode in season two. That's going to be coming out, goodness gracious, the last week of May, I believe. but check your listings. But that's going to be coming out soon. And there was a couple short films that I've done. And those are ones that are still being kind of in post-production. I did a feature film during the pandemic called Out of Breath, which is out now. I don't know if it's available on streaming, but I know that it had its premiere. And this is a movie that kind of takes the pandemic and makes it part of the story, where a black man is charged with shooting a white police officer, and he's trying to hide and escape in the city of New York. And there are some people that are after him, but there's some people that are sympathetic to the cause, and knowing that there continues to be racial tensions between, you know, the police community and the general public, it kind of uses that as the backdrop, which is, you know, very, very interesting, if nothing else. And that Emily's losing her mind over here. Yeah, sorry. Say hi to Nick. Say hi, Nick. Hey, there you go. So we're going to be it's going to be a very good year, I think, you know. And and then, of course, you know, I'm hopeful that Hindsight Tonight continues to kind of take off. So we've got a lot going on. We've got a lot on our plate, but there's plenty of room for more. So, you know, let me know when your movie starts moving along. I'd love to see it when it's finished.
Yeah, well, that Girls 5 ever, it sounds really interesting. You said it's on NBC, right?
Right. It's on their streaming service called Peacock.
Okay.
Which is the symbol, the NBC symbol is proud as a peacock. So Peacock is the name of the channel, but you could probably find episodes on YouTube, I would think. The season one was out about a year ago. It's a short series. It's a half hour long, and there's only 8 episodes in the first season. I think there's only 8 in the second season also. So you can binge the whole thing in like 3.5 hours.
I like shows like that because I don't have time to like wait every week for a new episode. Then I forget what happened. All those other shows that have like 20 episodes a season, an hour long. I just like to binge watch it over like 2 days or a day or so, and then get it all done.
But you'll enjoy it. It's fun.
All of those movies and shows sound quite interesting. Like, I'm looking forward to that one produced by Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. What's the name of that movie you said?
It's called Rustin, Rustin. Sorry, this cat's insane.
I'll be sure to look out for it.
Yeah, Rustin, and it's named after Bayard Rustin, who is the name of the civil rights activist. And Coleman Domingo is fantastic. He's a really, really engaged actor, and it was really eye opening to work a scene with him. Even though the scene is a little, it's comical looking back on it, but he kind of, I don't think I'm giving anything away by this. He rolls up a cab window on my hand as the cab driver, and I'm yelling, Roll it down, you know, that kind of funny thing. But we got to spend about 3 days on set, so it was fun.
You also got to work with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston on some movies. And there's quite a lot of well-known people that you've worked with. What was your experience like getting to work with those people?
Well, each person that I've worked with was, you know, it's a different type of experience. But going from the ones that you mentioned, the scene I did with Kevin Hart was in a movie called The Upside, which I don't know if it made the final cut or the director's cut or what it was, but he was playing the part of a down and out laborer who was looking for work. And I was a foreman looking for people to work. And he's asking me for a job. And I'm kind of looking at him like, you're 5 foot nothing. You can't work here, or something like that. What's interesting about that scene, even though it was a short scene, it took 3 days to film. Because my scene, that with the way that when they shoot these films, and you probably already know this, so just for your listening and viewing audience, when you are shooting a movie, you try to put scenes together. They're not necessarily, and usually not at all, in chronological order, but you'll put the scenes together because it's the same, it's the right length. You know, you can only shoot so much per day. So if you have a scene, let's say one that's outside and it's in front of a lemonade stand and it's a half page scene, and then you have another scene later in the movie that's also half of a page that's outside in the same general area, but it's at a newsstand, you might want to put those scenes together so that you can shoot them both in the same day. You don't have to move the camera much and you can take care of everything at once. So my scene was matched up with a scene where Kevin Hart was going to be driving this badass futuristic Ferrari that was not in production yet. It was going to be, it was sort of like a mock-up. You know, when you go to a car show in America, a lot of times they'll show you cars that you can't buy yet. They're just concept vehicles. So this was sort of a concept Ferrari that was going to be like this super special car that Kevin Hart would drive. So my scene would be shot first, and then they were going to do the other scene. So on the second day of filming of the movie, that was the day my scene was supposed to be. And early in the morning, they called me and said, we can't do your scene. And I said, why not? And they said, well, there's a problem with the Ferrari in the scene after yours that we're going to shoot on that day. And it's a special part that they need that no dealer, no car dealership has. They had to get the part from Italy because nobody knew what this part. It wasn't a production vehicle. And it was going to take a couple days to get the part. So they just couldn't shoot the scene. They were just going to just put the entire day of shooting off and shoot something else that day. So I was like, all right, that's fine. I still got paid. You still get paid, you know, for the day. And then a month later, they were a month into filming. They rescheduled my scene. And wouldn't you know it, the part malfunctioned. The day before my scene, they called and said, we have to push it off again. This Ferrari is still malfunctioning and we need to bring a mechanic from Ferrari from Italy over to the States to fix the car. So I was like, that's fine. That's another day of pay. I'm still, you know, making money, getting paid. So it turns out that we shot this on the last day of production. So I was on hold for 2 months while this movie was being filmed. They had the car fixed. Everything was ready. It was the last day of production, the final day of shooting. And early in the morning, I show up on set. It was the day after the NCAA basketball championships in the States, which, you know, is always a big deal, Final Four and all that kind of stuff. And I guess Kevin Hart was watching them late and doing whatever. And he was really tired. I'll just say that he looked exhausted. And I mean, really, even if there wasn't basketball on the night before, you come off a 2 month shoot, you're done. You need to cash in your chips for a while and you need to relax. And it's funny because in all of my time seeing Kevin Hart on stage or in movies, he's bouncing off energetic. The walls. He's got endless energy. He's yapping. He's loud. He's funny. He's doing all of his stuff. And he just looked like he was at slow motion speed. So I introduced myself and he was nice. And, you know, we're kind of talking, but he was extremely low energy that entire time. So that was a little bit interesting, just seeing him in that dynamic. And then later, because I was in the movie and I was there that day anyway, I got invited to the wrap party because when you're done shooting, they have a little, you know, sayonara, say goodbye to everybody kind of party. So I was invited to the party. I was there and it was fun. I got to meet Bryan Cranston and hung out and talked with him. What's also funny is my wife is actually in the movie more than me. She was just doing background work one day. And she got herself into a scene where she got to wear a really nice dress and she was walking down a hallway next to Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart. And as they're walking down the hallway, Cranston and Hart are talking to each other in their scene and she's just kind of walking next to them, but she's visible for, you know, like a good 7 or 8 seconds continuously. So I got paid all the money, but she got more screen time out of it. That was fun. Wow. We actually went to see the premiere in Toronto at the Toronto International Film Festival, or TIFF, they call it. It had its world premiere there, and we actually went and got to see it on the big screen. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, when you're speaking about Kevin Hart, like when I see him talk in interviews and stuff, he's quite profound, but you can tell that he's a workaholic. Like, I think he's even said it himself. Like, he's always keeping himself busy trying to – I was listening to a podcast with him and Mike Tyson. And it's like just the pressure of being on that level and like trying to like keep that success going because you never know when it's gone. Like you can see that guy, he puts in the time. So
yeah.
And when you're on screen, like you have to be bigger than life itself. And like he's able to capture that perfectly. But then when you're on your own, like when you like not on screen and stuff, you're gonna be jaded. Like you can't keep up that impression all the time.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you have to let your real self out. And the thing with Kevin is, you know, people take it for granted that, you know, he struggled for a lot of years, you know, and I can remember seeing him in movies where he had small parts. He was in one of the Scary Movies spoofs. There's movies that he was in and just had very small roles. So yeah, you don't want to lose what you have, but man, just getting it to begin with, you got to tip your cap off to that, you know. And he's a very funny stand-up comedian too, you know. Very similar ways, Chappelle also kind of came up the same way. He was in what movie was he in that he had a very small part in? Oh, it was the Eddie Murphy movie where he is the professor. Was it The Nutty Professor? I guess that's what it was. He was in the Nutty Professor. He played a stand-up comic who was, you know, joking around. And then from that, he gets more exposure and, you know, more opportunities. And that's really what we're all trying to do. It's very tough to just, boom, become a big star. I would think it's tougher to maintain that because you weren't able to put any roots down. But Kevin Hart had a chance to put some serious roots down. So, more power to him. I think it's great that he's still on top. Even after that horrible accident that he was in, car accident, like where you didn't know if he was going to just become somebody different. Like Tracy Morgan was in a terrible car accident. And for a while, when you'd see him, you were like, wow, man, he's not the same. You know, he's affected. So I'm very happy that, you know, hasn't seemed to have happened at Kevin.
Yeah. When you say, like, when you're speaking about, like, how hard it is just to make it in the industry, like that's like a real struggle, like a lot of people go through. And like there's stuff that happens, like, and you think, okay, you're gonna make it now, and then you realize, oh shit, that's not working out that way. And like life humbles you in a way. Like,
have you been spying on me, Nick?
Like for me, for example,
it's like my life story. That's funny.
For me, for example, when I won Best African Actor, I thought, okay, maybe that's it. That's when like the opportunities are going to start coming in. And here in South Africa, it's much more difficult because, like, obviously in America, there's Hollywood. The scope for making big time stuff is much bigger. Here, it's not that simple. And, when I got that, that's when I thought, okay, maybe it's time. And then I'm still hustling for an agent. Like, I don't want to offend any agents, but like I've noticed, like agents, especially here in South Africa, they're like the most weird people. they're just gonna give you like tell you like the day before the 2 a.m.
Yeah, so what do you mean by dish. Weird? Because I know about the agents here in the States. I know how they are, but describe how they're weird.
For me, it seems like they don't want to do their job. Like the agents that I've spoken to, they're like so unambitious, and they like send you a text at 2 a.m. saying that there's an audition the next day and I'm in another city, and I'm like, okay, I can't make that. And then they're like, because now I'm actually looking for like extra gigs, like gigs as extras, because I had to like swallow a humble pie, and I know that's going to be open up more opportunities. So I was speaking with this agent. I'm like, is there any gigs for extras? And then he's like, come tomorrow for shooting. No address, no time slot, nothing. I'm like, okay, where should I come? They're just like on a different, like,
that sounds a lot level. Like an agent that I had for many years here. It sounds, I feel like that agent left and moved to South Africa or something. I mean, the thing is I don't know much about South Africa. I'm sorry, Nick. I know Meerkat Manor and Oscar Pistorius, and then I'm stuck after that. I don't know anything else.
I don't even know Meerkat Manor.
Meerkat Manor is you're the Kalahari is in South Africa, right? Or am I wrong? The Kalahari Desert.
I think that's Namibia.
Oh, okay. It's not at the top of South Africa.
Yeah, that's at the
really?
Top.
Okay.
It's in Southern Africa.
All right. So meerkats are what we call prairie dogs here in America, but they're like little fun little rodents. And there was a show in America that ran for a couple of years that followed tribes of these little meerkats around the desert. And it was, you know, fun, I guess. But I'm just saying that's how limited I am with with that part of the world. It sounds like, have you ever thought about relocating, or is that just not even in the cards? Because, I mean, It has to work for somebody. Who's the very famous actress?
Charlize Theron.
Yes, from South Africa. At some point, I'm sure she had to say, "I'm going to give it a shot." And I'm not saying that you two are following the same career paths, but is it something you've considered?
I'm looking maybe in the next few years to maybe relocate. I don't know how the world's going to be in the next 2 years with Ukraine, Russia, global warming, all of those stuff in the way. But I'm trying to just like at the moment I'm working for one of the it's like the biggest news station over here, but I'm working as an editor. So I'm trying to just earn some revenue and then enough so I'm able to sustain myself if I move overseas, probably to America. But I don't know.
Is your film that you just got some financing for or partnerships with, is that going to be shot locally for you?
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to be shot in the city that I'm in, Pretoria, but I'm actually moving to Johannesburg because my work is there. So
Okay.
I was working at the same place last year, but now I've got a different job there. So there's shifts. So traveling to a different city every day is going to be quite hectic. So
Well, at least now you can get revenge on your agent. You can tell him, "I'm shooting my film tomorrow. I'll see you there," and don't give him the address.
yeah, I should do that. So, man, hey, it was great having you on the show. All the
Thank you.
best with your what do you call it? Telly.
Oh, the Telly Awards. Yes.
Yeah, the Telly Awards.
Telly. The Telly Awards. And the People's Telly, which is the ones that you get to vote on, but the general public gets to vote on. They're being announced May 24th, I think.
All the best on that, eh?
Go upward and grow every single day. The sky's the limit, Nick. We're gonna make it. Maybe in 10 years, you and I will meet up on a yacht somewhere where we're both millionaires and doing what we want and having fun. And we can look back on, "Hey, remember when we were both nobodies and we were doing a podcast 10 years ago? Ha ha ha. Who were those guys?" That kind
Toast
of
to
thing.
that.
Here, cheers. Cheers, my
Cheers.
friend.